Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived. This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All righty. All right. All right, everybody. Okay. All right. All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to the George Wilder Jr. Show on this beautiful day. Summer's here. Spring is not over yet, but it looks and feels like summer outside. I am not complaining, you know, but it's beautiful. I think we deserve the weather because on so many shows I've been saying it's been cloudy, raining, and windy, and cold, that, you know, but now I can't say that. You know, and I'm kind of glad that I can't say that. And I hope it's nice wherever you are, and wherever you are in the world. I hope it's a beautiful day for you and everything is going your way. All right. Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. And you've already seen that severed head of Donald Trump. It's all over the web. It's gone viral. It's gone worldwide. And it was basically. This woman called comedian, she calls herself a comedian. I've seen the photo. I've seen it. And I'm going to give you my take on it. I think it's awful. I am no fan of Trump. And I think Trump is a pig. I think he's the worst thing that this country has ever saw. But I don't wish no one to have his head hacked off or decapitation. The cutting off of heads, that's not me. That's not what I think a lot of us feel that way. I mean, we don't care much for Trump and his policies or the man himself because he's a pig. But I would never wish anything like that on him, that he, you know, somebody went and chopped his head off and stuff like that. That was just awful. The photograph predicted prediction of him was Kathy Griffin was standing straight up, holding up Donald Trump's severed head, just his head with blood all on his face. And, you know, that's uncalled for. That is really, that was really taking it to the max. I mean, I would love to see Trump impeached. I would love to see him go to jail, but I would not want to see the man, you know, get his head cut off or shot or assassinated. I wouldn't want to see that. You know, I mean, like a lot of other people, you have to respect the White House. You have to respect the White House. Trump is just a occupant. And then after he's elected out of there or ran out, it will be someone else. So you have to respect the presidency itself and respect the White House and respect the occupants of the White House. Regardless, if you don't like them, if you don't like their policies, that's okay. That, I mean, that's another way you can get at them, by criticizing them and voting against them in the coming election. But you don't, you just don't go around saying, predicting that. That the photo was just awful. It was just awful. If you've seen it, if you haven't seen it, go on the internet. It's still there. It's viral, and it's just awful. She's holding up a severed head of Donald Trump. His head has been hacked off, just his head, no other part of his body. And you know, and she's been fired. CNN has fired her. She doesn't have a job. There's going to be a lot of repercussions over this. And you know what? I actually don't blame those folks who are giving her those repercussions, because I think she deserves it. That was awful. That was over the top. You know, Trump is awful. Trump is pathetic. But you know, nothing like this should have happened. At least not to this extreme. This is crazy. This may play into Trump's investigation. They may, you know, whatever. Okay, Kathy Griffin has lost a decade-long gig ringing in the new year. Okay, she's been fired from CNN. She used to ring in the New Year's with Anderson Cooper as a backlash builds over her video displaying a likeness of Donald Trump's severed head. CNN, which has called the images disgusting and offensive after Griffin posted the video, the photographs, on Tuesday, today, announced Wednesday that it will not invite, they announced Wednesday that they will not invite her back for the Times Square Live New Year's Eve show special she had co-hosted annually since 2007 with CNN. Anderson Cooper. So she's been axed. She's been totally axed. She's not a part of the show anymore. And I think she should have been axed. This picture was awesome. This was gruesome. This was gory. This was out of a horror movie or something. But yet it was real. It was real live. And, you know, like I said before, a lot of us, we're not Trump supporters. I never voted for the guy. I would not vote for him. I think he's awful. But I would not do something like this. Okay. Her career is probably ended right now. I'm pretty sure she's got a few supporters out there saying, hey, well, I don't see anything wrong with it. But they are nuts. They're crazy. They are imbeciles. They're dummies. They're just awful people who they're awful people if they agree with what she's just done. Even she doesn't agree with it. She's on the internet and all over the place pleading for forgiveness, pleading for forgiveness. She didn't know that there would be such a backlash over this. I think she knew that there was going to be a backlash over this. You know, I think she did it for, attention. A lot of people do things for attention, and I think she did it for attention. She may not gotten what she wanted, but she did get the attention. She got the attention of her employers, so they fired her. And I don't blame them, because this was just over the top. Trump may be all kinds of things, but you don't attack the office of the White House. Not in this manner. If you want to attack the White House, if you don't like Trump, if you don't like what he's doing, vote his ass out. You don't have to, you know, do things that are going to get you in trouble. Okay? All right. But anyway, she is out of there, and she is still going around pleading her case, saying she's sorry. She's sorry. She's probably somewhere hiding her face now, because this is just extraordinary. I mean, whatever you think of Donald Trump, you know, it wasn't worth all of this. It wasn't worth her job. It wasn't worth her career. It wasn't worth her, you know, getting axed from her job. Okay, New Mexico casino has canceled a performance by Griffin. See, it's setting in already. She's losing her gigs. She's losing sponsors. She's losing people who want to hire her. So she's done. And a commercial endorsement deal has been canceled just weeks after she landed it. So she's suffering the consequences from this, and rightly so, because this is just awful. This is just totally awful. We will be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for tuning in to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. Stay with me.
My son has been arrested for walking while black. I get it.
A lot of sons have been arrested.
Yeah, I get it. It doesn't make me, you know, you can't buy your way out of this one. You can't educate your way out of it.
It's happening too much, or at least we know about it now.
It's always happened. We see more evidence of it. And too often people still are inclined to say, well, if he'd had a different attitude, well, if he hadn't been driving, well, if he hadn't been this, if he hadn't been that, almost as if the victim is partially to blame. You know, in the case of Garner, well, he shouldn't have resisted. In the case of Brown, well, where was he? In the case of Trayvon, well, he had a hood on, you know, and in the case of whoever, you know, in case of Sandra Bland, you know, well, her attitude was better. It's like, no, stop. Stop. This has nothing to do with the victims. This has everything to do with the culture of demeaning a person of color. And there is no justification for a society where my son has a far greater chance of being stopped, held, killed than your son, simply because he's black.
Kathy Griffin is still getting backlash from that photograph of Trump where she held up. I'm hearing it's a video, but what I've observed was a photograph, but it's authentic. It hasn't been doctored because it's all over the place. It's all over the world, viral. I mean, whatever you want to call it, it's out there. And her career has just sank because everybody who is anybody who's dealing with her has, you know, separated from her. And she is in really, really hot water for that photograph. And I'm going to say it again. I think she should be, because that was pathetic. It was uncalled for. It was disrespectful of the White House and the president. I am no fan of Donald Trump. But still in all, right is right, wrong is wrong. That was crazy. If you've been listening to the show earlier, we're talking about she depicted a severed head of Donald Trump in blood, you know, and that was just awful. It looked like the real thing. It looked like his actual head, if I can say it. But it's just awful, folks. Okay, I'm going to try not to talk about it anymore because it's so gruesome. I mean, I thought I was I thought I could write about gruesome things, but this takes the cake, you know. I mean, this really, really takes the cake. Okay, Hawk Harrelson, the announcer for the White Sox, will be retiring. After the 2018 season. I mean, you can say what you want about Hawk. He's one of my favorite announcers. I mean, he's the one who keeps me glued to the scene whenever I'm watching a White Sox game on television. And it's going to be tough for someone to actually to fill his shoes. Because Hawk Harrelson is baseball. He is baseball. I mean, it'll be weird not listening, not watching, or going to a baseball game and not hearing Hawk Harrelson. You can put it on the board. I mean, he's just awesome, and he looks as if he's in his 80s. Okay, I don't know. I'm just guessing. He may be late 70s or something. But the point is, it's not his age I'm actually interested in. It is his voice. His voice is just so vibrant and young and just clear and deep-throated. I mean, even if he was 90 years old, he'd probably still sound like he's 40. 30 or 40, because he has a olive voice, you know. I mean, he is an announcer and he's going to retire, and he should retire and spend time with his, you know, his wife, kids, grandkids, great grandchildren or whatever, you know, spend time with his family. I mean, you know, when you get that age, you want to spend your last days with the people who love you, and, you know, go out on the lake and just watch the water flow. I think, yeah, watch the water flow. That's good for me. I love that. I mean, a lot of people probably said, George, that's crazy. You, what are you doing? I was on the, we were out there on the lake and I was just sitting there watching the water flow. And then you got some people who actually like to watch it rain. Yeah, they just love to watch it rain. I mean, that's a good time for them. That is, that makes them smile, just sitting back doing nothing and watch it rain. Me, I like to sit back and do nothing and watch the water flow on the lakefront. Just watch it with the sun glistening down onto the water as the boats and ships pass by or, you know, go back and forth from the harbor. Just watching the water flow. Now you take actor, the actor James Cagney. I mean, he was in the piece. He were always a really, really tough guy. I mean, he beating up guys, shooting people, and this is the movies. And when he was not working, when he was not making movies, he would go home to his farm and just sit on his porch and watch it rain. That was his highlight, with his wife and watch it rain. And he had a great time. But when he went back to work to make those movies, he was a bad guy. He was a tough guy. He was breaking out of jail. He was kicking people up the butt. But that wasn't him. That wasn't him. The real James Cagney was the guy who just left work, left all the toughness behind, and went home. And he was just mild and meek. And he went home to his family. And he just sat and watched the rain fall or watch it snow. And he wasn't tough at all. It was just something he was just playing on in the movies. And he was very, very good at it. All right. Enough about watching the river flow. I hope I haven't made anybody bored. But when you get older, and I think he did it in his 20s and 30s, not just when he got older. He passed away at the age of 86. So he loved to watch the rain, just watch the rainfall. Go back to his farm, his ranch, whatever, and he would just sit there and just watch the rain flow. No guns, no actions, no car chases or anything. He just sat there for hours and he enjoyed it. I mean, hey, whatever you do for enjoyment, no matter how weird it is or how weird some people think it is, if you enjoy it, you do it, especially if it's not breaking the law or if it's not too weird, you know. And I'm finding out that watching the rain fall and watching the river flow can be therapeutic. You know, some people, well, George, are you nuts? You know, no, I'm not. But, you know, it's just something I like to do when I'm not busy, you know. So, and I'm with James Cagney. I just want to watch the river flow sometimes, and especially when you've done your work, you know, you're off television and you're off the radio, you're taking a break from writing. You just want to sit and just, you know, take in nature. And I think it's beautiful. That's just me. It's my opinion. All right. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, folks. It is the weather-wise, and it's great in Chicago. Has anybody played the Powerball? I got a Powerball ticket. If I win the Powerball, do you think I'm going to continue to do this radio show? Do you think I'm going to continue to write books? Yes. Nothing is going to take me away from my passion, whether I win the Powerball tonight or not. I have a Powerball ticket here and I have a mega ticket. Let's see. For the Powerball, 531-217, it is $302 million. What would you do with that kind of money? And for the Power Play, or did I read the one wrong? Okay, let's see. The mega is $85 million. I read it wrong. I have a mega ticket, and it's $85 million tonight. Or was it last night? We got to check that out. Now, the Powerball is for tonight, 31st, is $302 million. You know, I know a lot of people who say if they win that kind of money, they know what they would do. And, you know, it's a shame if you if when you win these this kind of a jackpot and all this money, you know who's standing by? The IRS. They're gonna take half of it, or two thirds of it. Now that's a damn shame. Now, if anybody talks about abolishing the IRS, I'm with them. You know, that's a shame. So many people who win the jackpot like this, and next thing you know, here come the IRS. They want half of it, or a little over half of it. So, and you just, I mean, in some countries, you got countries where there is no taxation. I mean, you win a jackpot, you get it all. You get the whole thing. Not in America. They want it. They want every. They want it. They you can go to jail, you know, and they take half of your winnings or a little bit over your winnings, and you can't even get health care in this country. Can't get health care. You can't get a decent job. But if you win the lottery, the Powerball, the Mega Ball, they're standing there to take half of your money. Take half of your money. I just think that's awful. Well, anyway, I got to check these numbers out because I may be a winner. Like I said before, if I should win the lottery and all of this money, I would still be doing my show. I'd just spruce it up a little bit better. Wear better clothes, probably. Oh, wow. You know, buy a few, you know, it's just something to dream. And I do a lot of dreaming, folks, believe me. Anyway, we're going to check these tickets out. I got two of them. I usually don't have any luck playing this lottery. I usually don't. I've been playing for, many, many years, and I haven't won a damn thing. But I keep playing because I say, hey, well, maybe one day my ship has to come in, and one day your ship has to come in. You know, all right. Right now, my guest on the marquee says here, Mia Yoko Taylor. Okay, she's going to be talking about the passion of purpose. Hopefully, and it's going to be a lot of commentary on the show today. All right, thank you for listening to. Thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for being a part of the show. Thank you, everybody. We're going to do this, and then
we will
do something
else. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. This is the Talk About Time.
Split. Why Mary Kay Letourneau's former student is leaving her 21 years after the illicit affair that stunned the country. Plus, former first daughter Chelsea Clinton is live to share how mom's handling life after losing. Her advice for new first daughter Ivanka Trump and celebrating women who changed the world. Let's fire up Hot Topics with Whoopi, Sunny Hostin, Joy Behar, Sarah Haynes, and Jedediah Bila. Now, let's get things started.
All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio out of the city of Chicago, the state of Illinois. Folks, we are in some trying times. We are in some dark times. We must fight for an America without hate. We must fight for an America without bigotry. We must fight for an America without racism. We must fight for our rights. We must fight to continue to be Americans. Some of those rights are being threatened, taken away, but we have to get out here and fight the good fight. You know, and it has to be done, folks. It has to be in a non-violent way. We know how to do things non-violently. So let's go out and make our voices heard, fighting non-violently. All right, folks, here's Ashley Judd once again, the actress Ashley Judd. She's going to be talking about abuse railed at women online, a lot of abuse. I'm thinking that she gets a lot of abuse online, and she's going to be using some vulgar language, some profanity. Get ready so you'll know that this is coming. All right, this is Ashley Judd. All righty.
Ashley Judd, stupid fucking slut. You can't sue someone for calling them a cunt. If you can't handle the internet, fuck off, whore. I wish Ashley Judd would die a horrible death. She is the absolute worst. Ashley Judd, you're the reason women shouldn't vote. Twisted is such a bad movie, I don't even want to rape it. Whatever you do, don't tell Ashley Judd. She'll die alone with a dried out vagina. If I had to fuck an older woman, oh my God, I would fuck the shit out of Ashley Judd. That bitch is hot AF. The unforgivable shit I would do to her. Online misogyny is a global gender rights tragedy.
Come here.
And it is imperative that it ends. Girls and women's voices and our allies' voices are constrained in ways that are personally, economically, professionally, and politically damaged. And when we curb abuse, we will expand freedom.
I just got that uniform.
I am a Kentucky basketball fan, so on a fine March day last year, I was doing one of the things I do best. I was cheering for my Wildcats. The daffodils were blooming, but the referees were not blowing the whistle when I was telling them to. Funny, they're very friendly to me before the opening tip, but they really ignore me during the game. Three of my players were bleeding, so I did the next best thing.
Do you know for sure?
I tweeted.
$15. I looked it up. It was 13.
It is routine for me to be treated in the ways I've already described to you. It happens to me every single day on social media platforms such as Twitter and Facebook. Since I joined Twitter in 2011, misogyny and misogynists have amply demonstrated they will dog my every step. My spirituality, my faith, being a hillbilly, I can say that, you can't, all of it is fair game. And I have responded to this with various strategies.
All right. Welcome back to the show. Thank you, Ashley. We have a phone call. Let's see what's going on. What's up? All right, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead.
Hey, how you doing? This is Miyoko Taylor.
Oh, you know what? I thought you were a woman. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I get that sometimes.
Yeah, because, you know, it looks like a female's name, but I'm sorry. I want to apologize for that. And
okay.
Thank you for
not
coming on. Okay, thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for doing the show. And I'm trying to check something right here. Let's see. This is the last month. This is the last day of May, and the May 31st. Let's see. You're going to be talking about the passion of purpose.
Okay.
something to that effect?
Yeah, something to that effect. There's a book that I called.
Okay, hold on a minute. I want you to tell my audience, give my audience a little bio about yourself. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you've been doing, and then you can talk about your book.
Okay.
Go right ahead, anytime.
Oh, okay. My name's Miyoko Taylor. I am a personal development and emotional mastery coach. I started off in a situation where I was found myself working in a 9-to-5 that I absolutely hated. I was in a 7-year relationship that didn't serve either of us. But we both were afraid to actually get out of that relationship because we got comfortable with being uncomfortable, being in a comfort zone. And I was severely overweight at the time. And, I had faced a point in my life where I looked in the mirror and I just burst into tears, and I said one of two things has to take place, and it was either I was going to go down this same spiral of doing the things that I wasn't passionate about, or I was going to make one of the most scariest decisions I've ever made in my life, and that was to decide to go against the grain, go against everything that was deemed the norm to everyone else other than myself. And the interesting thing of what I found when I did that is that I started to make progress in my life, and I haven't looked back ever since.
Wow. Congratulations. Congratulations. And you're using your experience, what you've experienced in the past, to try to help others who may be going through or have gone through some of the things you have.
Absolutely. Because I mean, the reality is so many people have been or are now in that same particular situation where they are just living life on accident. They're not really doing the things that they love to do, that they're passionate about. You know, people are dying every day with their dreams. And I think that's just a tragedy all within itself.
Me too. Me too. I think that's just a total tragedy. And I think it's, you know, that's why I'm here to try to help people to try to realize their dreams. And they're dying with their dreams, and they're dying with a load of talent too. And that's sad.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's sad. So how would you motivate somebody who are about to let their dreams just go by the wayside? How would you tell that person, that individual, to be positive and go out and try to pursue your dreams?
I think the first priority with them, George, is that they have to become self-aware. I didn't make any change any major changes until I was self-aware. And I think that's something that's very important, and I can't stress it enough. We often coast through life with the normal day-to-day activities. Like I said, the 9-to-5 jobs, you know, going to college, getting the degree, getting the pension, and then retiring, and then deciding to go on vacation and do all the things that we wanted to do. Some people don't even make it to that point. So I think it's the fact of just becoming self-aware and saying, hey, what am I doing with my life right now? If I were to leave this earth tomorrow, what can I say about my life? Have I done anything that I'm passionate about? What am I doing right now? What can I say about myself? And I think when you start to really become that self-aware, it's scary, but it's also it brings you to reality at the same time. Because most people don't stop. Life just happens. Most people don't stop and reevaluate the direction that they're headed. They're just going there. So I think,
yeah, you're
when
right.
It comes to motivating somebody, that's where it begins.
No, I was going to say most people just live every day, you know, without thinking about what happened yesterday. They're just living for the moment.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you really can't. You can't, and I always tell people, you can't motivate somebody when they have no idea what they're motivated about. So that's where the self-awareness comes in. I mean, what is important to you? Are you doing any of those things? There's an exercise that I do with a lot of my clients, and at the end of the exercise, you know, I tell them to write down everything that makes them happy, write down everything they want to do in their life, and they're writing all these things down, but the interesting thing is at the end of the exercise, I ask them, well, how many things how many of these things are you doing right now? And most of them maybe do one or two of those things or none at all. It's absolutely amazing. So then I ask them, I follow up with a question. I say, well, what are you waiting for? And then the answer is always, I don't know. It's never a definite answer. It's just always, I don't know. So that's why self-awareness is important, because you have a lot of these motivational speakers and these motivational books trying to motivate people, but people don't even know what they should be motivated about. They have to figure that out.
Yeah.
So once you get to that, then you can add on the motivating and the steps and the tools and all those things. But until you don't know yourself or what you're motivated about, you can't really motivate a person to do something that is not within them that they love to do or they're passionate about. That's the problem with a lot of people. A lot of people aren't really lazy. Yeah. They're just not doing what they're passionate about.
Yeah. Yeah, I've ran into some people like that who are just, you try to motivate them, you try to, you know, give them courage to tell them that they are, that there is something within them that could make them great, but you know, they, after a while, you just say you wash your hands of it and you move on, because you know, you can't waste your time with someone who is not self-aware, who doesn't care about being self-aware.
Absolutely.
So you got to go on to the next person who, yeah, go right ahead.
You got it. You have to reach that point. I can motivate you till I'm blue in the face. I can give you all the tools till I'm blue in the face. But unless you have a certain degree of self-motivation, then it defeats the purpose. And what I've found is that, and I used to be a victim of doing the same thing, of providing all these techniques for people to motivate them and leadership and all those other things. But they have to first understand themselves and what they're passionate about, what they love to do, what their goals are in life. Because if you're not touching any of those things, it's not going to motivate them. They're not going to be willing to take action, because you're still stuck in that everyday routine.
Yeah. Yeah. If you see someone, if you notice someone who's trying to make something of themselves, that's going to make you want to go and help that individual, because that individual is trying to help themselves. They just need a little bit more of a push, and you're there to give them that push.
You got it. And you said something very important there. You see the effort there. You see the willingness to take action.
Yeah.
These are not people that are just sitting there and have just pretty much given up. These people know that they need to make a change. They just don't know how to do so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Can we talk about your book now?
Sure.
Okay.
So the name of my book is Finding Your Amazing: 5 Steps to Transforming Your Life. And the way this book was particularly designed, it kind of is an introduction to how I actually coach my clients. But the interesting thing about the book is I've taken the keys and the action steps from my own personal life, my own journey from back then up until now. And it's literally in sequential order on all the things that I did that have helped me. And I still utilize every day up until this point.
Wow, that's great. That sounds beautiful. What are some of the reactions you get from this? Are you getting from the book?
Well, what's very interesting, because I made this book for people such as myself. I'm 36. So people that were already in careers that they may have not been passionate about, that they didn't love, and they found themselves stuck at a certain point in their life, and they needed to make a change. So it's that particular transformation. When I started to write that book, it was geared to that particular person from, I want to say, age maybe 35 to 55, 60. It doesn't matter. If you're passionate about something, you want to do it. I made it for those particular people. But what I found is that a lot of youth has gravitated to this book. 16, 17, 18, 21, 22.
Yeah.
People in college, people that are veering into that next phase of their lives because they don't want to make some of the same mistakes that we've made or that I've made. They want to get it right from the very beginning. So I find that very interesting. A lot of millennials, the earlier millennials, are really gravitating to this book.
And so they're gravitating to the book because they probably are searching for that kind of knowledge, something that's going to propel them onward.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we live in the age where the entrepreneur, the business owner, I mean, it's at an all-time high. I mean, I'm seeing 13, 14, 15-year-old visionaries coming up in all these magazines all the time. So, I mean, that's where their head is at. Their head is at innovation, creativity, leaving legacy. These are where their minds are at such a young age. It's really fascinating.
Do you have the book? Do you have your book with you?
I have an excerpt from the book.
An excerpt?
I would love to read. If you need to ask me any questions in regards to the book, I can pretty much answer.
Okay. Can you do the excerpt now?
Sure. This excerpt is taken from chapter 2 of the book. And the title of that chapter is Whatever You Believe, That You Will Receive. And it's pretty much talking about your belief system. And it reads as follows. It says, you can have all the talent, intelligence, and physical ability on the planet. However, if your thoughts are self-defeating, if they're negative, if they're uninspiring or not motivating at all, those gifts and talents mean absolutely nothing. So it's like having the best airplane ever made that can take you anywhere you want to go. The only problem is the pilot has never flown an airplane before and is afraid of heights. Sounds pretty bad, doesn't it? So you must understand that it is impossible to have long-term success in anything in life without the right belief system. The potential for you to be great is already there. The problem is that somewhere along the line, you stop believing. You stop believing in yourself, your abilities, and in the goals you were once excited about. So in the case you weren't aware, the current state of your life right now is based on your beliefs. So your belief system, wherever you are in life right now, has led you exactly to the point you are. Whether you consider your present situation good or bad, your belief system always leads you there.
That sounds great. Sounds wonderful. Mia Yoko Taylor on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Can you tell us where we can find the book if we wanted to, if my audience wanted to check this book out, where would we go to check it out and give us a website?
Absolutely. You can find the book on Amazon and it's on Barnes and Noble.
So all we got to do is type your name in the audio bar and your book will come up.
Absolutely. And if they want to find me on social media, I'm also on Instagram and Twitter, Miyoko Taylor. That's M as in Mary, E-I-Y-O-K-O, Taylor, T-A-Y-L-O-R.
Okay. Okay. Are you planning on doing another book for the future?
Yes,
on the
I actually have another book in the works.
Oh. That's great. That's wonderful. Miyoko Taylor on the George Wilder Jr. Show. I wish you a lot of luck in getting that other book out. When you get when that other book is published, man, hey, look me up, all right?
I sure will. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for being on the show. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. George Wilder Jr. Show is now on. And that was a great guest, Miyoko Taylor on Passion of Purpose and commentary on the George Wilder Jr. Show. We will be doing this. I think we're going to go back up, down. Let's see. You're listening to the George. We were talking about the photograph of Trump, or were we talking, or were we doing Ashley Judd? Let's try Ashley Judd again. All right.
Ashley Judd, stupid fucking slut. You can't sue someone for calling them a cunt. If you can't handle the internet, fuck off, whore. I wish Ashley Judd would die a horrible death. She is the absolute worst. Ashley Judd, you're the reason women shouldn't vote. Twisted is such a bad movie, I don't even want to rape it. Whatever you do, don't tell Ashley Judd. She'll die alone with a dried out vagina. If I had to fuck an older woman, oh my God, I would fuck the shit out of Ashley Judd. That bitch is hot AF. The unforgivable shit I would do to her. Online misogyny is a global gender rights tragedy, and it is imperative that it ends. Girls and women's voices and our allies' voices are constrained in ways that are personally, economically, professionally, and politically damaged. And when we curb abuse, we will expand freedom. I am a Kentucky basketball fan, so on a fine March day last year, I was doing one of the things I do best. I was cheering for my Wildcats. The daffodils were blooming, but the referees were not blowing the whistle when I was telling them to. Funny, they're very friendly to me before the opening tip, but they really ignore me during the game. Three of my players were bleeding, so I did the next best thing. I tweeted. It is routine for me to be treated in the ways I've already described to you. It happens to me every single day on social media platforms such as Twitter and Facebook. Since I joined Twitter in 2011, misogyny and misogynists have amply demonstrated they will dog my every step. My spirituality, my faith, being a hillbilly, I can say that, you can't, all of it is fair game. And I have responded to this with various strategies. I've tried engaging people. This one guy was sending me hyper sexual nasty stuff, and there was a girl in his avatar, and I wrote him back and said, is that your daughter? I feel a lot of fear that you may think about and talk to women this way. And he surprised me by saying, you know what, you're right, I apologize. Sometimes people want to be held accountable. This one guy was musing to I don't know who, that maybe I was the definition of a cunt. I was married to a Scot for 14 years, so I said, cunt means many different things in different countries. But I'm pretty sure you epitomize the global standard of a dick. I've tried to rise above it. I've tried to get in the trenches, but mostly I would scroll through these social media platforms with one eye partially closed, trying not to see it, but you can't make a cucumber out of a pickle. What is seen goes in. It's traumatic. And I was always secretly hoping in some part of me that what was being said to me and about me wasn't true. Because even I, an avowed, self-declared feminist who worships at the altar of Gloria, internalized the patriarchy. This is really critical. Patriarchy is not boys and men. It is a system in which we all participate, including me. On that particular day, for some reason, that particular tweet after the basketball game triggered something called a cyber mob. This vitriolic, global outpouring of the most heinous hate speech, death threats, rape threats. And don't you know, when I was sitting at home alone in my nightgown, I got a phone call, and it was my beloved former husband, and he said on a voicemail, loved one, what is happening to you is not okay. And there was something about him taking a stand for me that night that allowed me to take a stand for myself, and I started to write. I started to write about sharing the fact that I'm a survivor of all forms of sexual abuse, including three rapes, and the hate speech I get in response to that. These are just some of the comments posted to news outlets. Being told I'm a snitch is really fun. Thank you, Jesus. May your grace and mercy shine. So I wrote this feminist op-ed. It is entitled, Forget Your Teen. It is your online gender violence toward girls and women that can kiss my righteous ass.
Thank you.
And I did that alone, and I published it alone, because my chief advisor said, please don't. The rain of retaliatory garbage that is inevitable, I fear for you. But I trust girls, and I trust women, and I trust our allies. It was published. It went viral. It proves that every single day, online misogyny is a phenomenon endured by us all over the world. And when it is intersectional, it is worse. Sexual orientation, gender identity, race, ethnicity, religion, you name it, it amplifies the violence endured by girls and women, and for our younger girls, it is worse. It's clearly traumatizing. Our mental health, our emotional well-being are so gravely affected because the threat of violence is experienced neurobiologically as violence. The cortisol shoots up, the limbic system gets fired, we lose productivity at work. And let's talk about work. Our ability to work is constrained. Online searches of women applying for jobs reveal nude pictures of them, false allegations they have STDs, their addresses indicating that they are available for sex, with real examples of people showing up at this house for said sex. Our ability to go to school is impaired. 96% of all postings of sexual images in our young people, girls, our girls, our boys, are 2 to 3 times more likely non-consensually to share images. And I want to say a word about revenge porn. Part of what came out of this tweet was my getting connected with allies and other activists who are fighting for a safe and free internet. We started something called the Speech Project, Curbing Abuse, Expanding Freedom. And that website provides a critical forum because there is no global legal thing to help us figure this out. But we do provide on that website a standardized list of definitions because it's hard to attack a behavior in the right way if we're not all sharing a definition of what that behavior is. And I learned that revenge porn is often dangerously misapplied. It is the non-consensual sharing of an image used tactically to shame and humiliate a girl or woman that attempts to pornographize us. Our natural sexuality is, I don't know about yours, pretty gorgeous and wonderful. And my expressing it does not pornography make. So I have all these resources that I'm keenly aware so many people in the world do not. I was able to start the Speech Project with colleagues. I can often get a social media company's attention. I have a wonderful visit to Facebook HQ coming up. Hasn't helped the idiotic reporting standards yet. I actually pay someone to scrub my social media feeds, attempting to spare my brain the daily iterations of the trauma of hate speech. And guess what? I get hate speech for that. Oh, you live in an echo chamber. Well, guess what? Having someone post a photograph of me with my mouth open saying they can't wait to come on my face, I have a right to set that boundary. And this distinction between virtual and real is specious because guess what? That actually happened to me once when I was a child. And so that tweet brought up that trauma and I had to do work on that. But you know what we do? We take all of this hate speech and we disaggregate it and we code it and we give that data so that we understand the intersectionality of it. You know, when I get porn, when it's about political affiliation, when it's about age, when it's about all of it. We're going to win this fight. There are a lot of solutions. Thank goodness. I'm going to offer just a few. And of course, I challenge you.
All right. I had to cut in on that, but because I wanted to say that Illinois, for the third year in a row, will be without a budget. These people cannot get it together in the state of Illinois. People are suffering. Social programs are closing. People are hungry. People are homeless. People are have lost their jobs. People will be losing their jobs. When you have no budget, there's no spending going on. And without a budget, the bills piles up. We have billions and billions of dollars in unpaid bills, debt, and these assholes in the legislature can't seem to get this thing done. They can't seem to get it done. They go through all the channels, but there's one thing that's holding them up, and that's Governor Bruce Rauner. This man will not, 3 years, we've had no budget for 3 years. The state, we owe $16 billion in back payments to vendors and agencies who are not getting paid. Colleges, universities, state colleges, universities aren't getting their money. They have to lay off faculty, lay off personnel. Kids, our education, college educations are being put in limbo. And this man does not care. He does not give a good damn about what's going on in the state of Illinois, which he threw in flux. And he's out there saying that it's somebody else's fault. His job as governor is to get a budget for the state of Illinois to pay the bills. To pay the bills. He doesn't want to do that. He can't stand public education. He can't stand public education in the city of Chicago. He loves public education downstate. They have all the money. He takes money from city schools, Chicago schools, and give it to the rich schools downstate. And this man wants to be reelected. There's no way this is going to happen. He has ruined Illinois. And right now, with no budget, it simply means no money can be spent. There's no money to be spent. All he has, he can get a budget in the next 24 hours if he wanted to. But he doesn't want to. Why? Because he wants to wreck Illinois, and the Democrat says, no, you're not going to do that. He wants to upend middle class people in the state. He wants to get rid of unions. He wants to do a lot of damage to the state of Illinois, and the Republicans, the Democrats, no, you can't do that. We're not going to let you do it. And the people of this state, we're right in the middle of everything. This is why people have been leaving this state and this city in droves. And I don't blame them. I really don't blame them. You blame these rotten, low-down, no-good, lying, corrupt politicians in this state who are making life worse for working people, who are making life worse for the working poor and liking it and loving it. You know, and he wants to run for re-election. It is not going to happen, Bruce Rauner. You might as well. He's got commercials all over the television. It seems as if he's mocking this state for not having a budget. He's mocking it. He's grinning. He's laughing. He's making fun of us because we don't have a budget. And he has power to give us a budget, but he's laughing and saying, well, you ain't got a budget, you know. He's a failed governor. He's a failed ass governor because he wants to, he wants to have this thing called a turnaround agenda, and it's going, and it has gone nowhere. And he's pissed off about that. So for the third year, we have no budget in the state of Illinois. That means that a lot of people have lost their jobs. A lot of agencies and programs for the hungry, for the elderly, Meals on Wheels, senior citizen centers, you know, things like that. The elderly, the disabled, the mentally ill. There's no help for them. Because this man has not paid his bills. Jobs have been lost. We have 70,000 state workers in the state of Illinois. They would not be getting paid if it wasn't for a court order. If it wasn't for court orders, Illinois would have fallen off the cliff, and this jackass of a governor would have blamed other people for it when he is the sole blame for it. He sounds good when he talks, but we all know where the blame lies. When you're a governor of any state in America, your job, your primary job is to have a budget, annual budget. It's in every state constitution. If you don't have a budget, if you're not getting a budget for your state, then you're not doing your job. Every state in America, except for Illinois, we don't have a budget. Every state, and a lot of these states, majority of these states have Republican governors. But we have a Republican governor, and he's an asshole because he is a failed governor. Every newspaper, every outlet, every reporter, is saying this. Majority of them are saying that he's a failed governor, but he still runs his mouth and try to blame other people for his shortcomings. And he wants to win re-election. That's the kicker. He's a failed governor. He doesn't give a damn. He doesn't care. He wants to run Illinois. He wants to control everything, and the Democrats won't let him. So he is going to run Illinois. But he only has until November 18th, and then he is out of office, and we will kick him straight to the curb because he's done nothing to destroy this great, beautiful, and wonderful state, driving people from it, because he will not get a state budget. I mean, we have these great colleges and universities that other people from outside of Illinois, they are not attending a lot of these universities. They're not coming from other states or other countries to attend schools in Illinois because of the budget crisis. Why would someone want to come to a school, attend a school that they're not sure they're going to graduate on time because of the budget stalemate? This is a damn shame. People are leaving the state. I can't blame them. Like I said, I cannot blame them. Because of Bruce Rauner, because of Rahm Emanuel, and even the city council and the legislature. These people don't know what they're doing. They don't know what they're doing is upending people's lives. You go to work every day, they don't give a damn. You got a car, you got a house, you got to pay rent. These people don't give a care. The governor doesn't give a damn. You got kids to take care of, you need daycare. They don't care. One of the things you're going to do in the state of Illinois and the city of Chicago, pay taxes. You're going to pay over the Memorial Day weekend, crime. I think I talked about this yesterday on the show. You know that the police department and the mayor and all these people are bragging that the long Memorial Day weekend was successful because there wasn't a lot of people didn't die. There was a few, but a lot of people didn't die. And I think I was saying something like, "Does it make any difference whether if 10 people die or 20 people die or 30 people die?" You know, so I'm not buying it. I am not buying it. But these are reasons to why people are upending Illinois and Chicago. Crime, a budget. And Bruce Rauner, these people don't seem to care. Public schools are in disarray. They don't have any money. They're broke. And the only reason why they're broke and may be on the brink of bankruptcy is because of Bruce Rauner not signing a budget. He dislikes public schools so badly. He dislikes African-American children who are 90% of public schools. He dislikes them so much. And it shows. He's a racist to the core. Now, the white schools downstate, he gives them all kinds of money that they do not need. The money is needed upstate in the Chicago schools where he's not giving any money. Matter of fact, he's taking away money and giving it to the schools downstate with the Lily White kids. That's wrong. That is wrong. It's like Robin Hood in reverse. You're taking from the poor and giving to the rich. He's a racist pig. And then when everybody is jumping in his quickly pit as if we're so stupid that we don't know what he's doing. That's one of the things about some Republicans, and I say some. Some of them talk to us straight in the face and say that some of the dumbest things because they think we're stupid and we're going to believe them because they're politicians, and we're not. We're not. Bruce Rauner is the worst thing to ever happen to the state of Illinois. I can't say that for every Republican around the state, every Republican governor around this this country, America. I can't say, but I can say this plainly about Bruce Rauner. He's the worst thing that ever happened to the state of Illinois, and you can take that to the bank. I've been, you know, blasting his ass every the first day I sat down here to broadcast. The first day he took office, I was blasting him. Because on his first day, he just like Donald Trump, on his first day, he started making massive cuts and making massive threats and making demands as if he was God sent to Illinois. Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. Illinois has had a lot of problems even before he became governor. Yeah, we were in dire straits. But this guy, Bruce Rauner, he only made it a lot worse. He made it worse. And all he's doing is blaming Democrats. And all he has to do is just take his pen, go to his desk, and sign a budget. And he will not do it. He's making up all kinds of excuses, all kinds of lies, spinning out of control, unfounded rhetoric, that his rhetoric. And, you know, and when he and the rich people, they want to take over this state. That's what they want. He and Ken Griffin. Ken Griffin is a billionaire who, my understanding, gave Rauner $20 million for his reelection campaign. That's a waste of money because Rauner will not be elected. He's a pig for letting this state go without a budget for 3 whole years, and people are suffering, losing their jobs, losing state funding for this and that. If it's funded by the state of Illinois, believe me, you're not going to get it. And if you are getting paid by the state of Illinois, you're doing it because of court orders. The judge sued the state to keep the state from taking certain monies away from certain individual agencies. But the majority of these agencies that help people have closed their doors, or they will be closing their doors. A lot of these agencies, social agencies, will be closing their doors by the end of May 2017, which is now. They're closing their doors right now. Senior citizens centers around the city closing. You know, seniors go out to mingle with each other at these centers, and, you know, they have lunch and dinner and breakfast at these centers, and, you know, they give them a chance to get out of the house and enjoy themselves. These kinds of programs are closing down, and jobs are being lost because of it. Meals on Wheels. where the city brings if the elder people are shed in their homes or in their apartments or nursing homes, you have this truck going around just delivering food to seniors. That's going to stop. Isn't that unpassionate? Isn't that crazy? And this guy, all he's doing is laughing his ass off, not signing a budget, making excuses, blaming other people. He's the damn governor of a state. If a state doesn't have a budget for 3 years, the governor is to blame. The legislature in Illinois, they're trying to work with this guy. They're coming halfway, and they want Rauner to come the other half. Rauner refuses. He refuses. He dead refuses. The man refuses to do his job. And he's constantly trying to blame other people, thinking that we're dumb enough that we're going to believe him. Nobody is dumb enough to believe this guy. Everybody knows that this state is in a flux because of this guy, Rauner, Bruce Rauner, not doing his job. He's not doing his job. The guy is not doing his job. And once again, folks, here's the kicker. He wants to run for re-election. He wants to run for re-election. He's got commercials all over the damn television. Every time I see his face coming up on my television, I turn it off. Get off my TV. Because the guy is a liar. He's a thug. He's a Republican. What can I say? And all they're doing is hurting people. Middle-class people, poor people. The other day, I think I was talking about on the show where the House of Representatives in Illinois passed a minimum wage, $15 an hour over 5 years. If you've listened to the show, you've heard it. It doesn't matter. They can pass every minimum wage they want, the House. But this governor, he's going to come up with all kinds of excuses not to pass it. Not to pass it. He don't give a damn. These folks feel that if you pass a $15 minimum wage, you're going to be hurting businesses. No, what you're going to be doing, you're going to be uplifting. You're going to be uplifting people's lives. That's what you're going to be doing. But these jackass Republicans around the country, they are wreaking havoc on their states. And the only reason why a lot of these Republicans are in office is because a lot of people didn't vote. That's the only reason. People have to get motivated. People have to get mad. People have to get pissed and just go out here and vote these jackasses out of office. 2018 is not that far. Everybody's going to have to get registered. If you're not registered, you're going to have to get mad. You're going to have to get angry and go to the polls. Don't call them. Don't call out names. Don't do anything. Just go to the polls and vote these jackasses out onto the curve. But I can guarantee you this. I think as 2018 looms near, I think the Republicans are going to try to, as they always, try to suppress the vote, to keep you from voting, doing all kinds of things to keep you from voting, gerrymandering, to keep you from going to the polls and voting their asses out to the curve. I think they're going to be doing a lot of shenanigans to try to get you keep voting, but you can't. You can't. If you're registered, you cannot let this happen. If you know people who aren't registered, get them registered. Voting should be the main priority. We have to take this country back. We got Donald Trump. We have to take this country back. And Donald Trump, he's another hit case in itself. I mean, he went overseas and he totally embarrassed us. He totally embarrassed his country. It was a disaster, his overseas meeting. He comes back. When he comes back 9 days later, it was a success. It was a home run. It was not. It was a disaster. You even got some Republicans saying that Donald Trump overseas trip was successful. Now, don't listen to that because that's a lie. If you were following it, you would say the same thing. It was a disaster. Yeah, he got some kiss ass Republicans on the side who's going to say anything for him. But when he was in that G7 summit and he was walking in a crowd of world leaders and he pushed and shoved his way up to the front and just stood there like he was King Kong or King Tut or what, for a photo op, that was awful. That was bullying process or bullying progress. That was bullying. Shove that man out of the way so he can get up front, so the cameras can be on him, Donald Trump. He's a pig. And I do think that Bruce Rauner, the governor of Illinois, once the election looms near 2018, he's going to be, I think the Democrats and the independents are probably going to have his face side by side with Trump. And if that happens, he's sure to lose. He's sure to lose. We have had no budget in the state of Illinois for 3 years. For 3 years, there's no budget. You imagine what a state, what would happen to a large state like Illinois with no budget? Means you can't spend money. And one of his jobs, Bruce Rauner's job in the state of Illinois, is to spend money to make sure the state doesn't fall into Lake Michigan. But he doesn't. He doesn't give a damn. He doesn't care. He's lying and flying and all that rhetoric coming out of his mouth as if we're stupid. I don't know who he's talking to when he's trying to explain why he will not enact a budget for the state of Illinois. I don't know who he's talking to. He's not talking to the people of Illinois because they can't stand him. I mean, when you're messing with somebody's money, and that's what Bruce Rauner is doing, messing with money, other folks' money, he can forget it. You don't mess with people's livelihoods. You mess with that cash, your money, they're coming after you. And that's what people have been doing because he's been, and he wants to destroy the state. I think Bruce Rauner had it from the beginning that he was going to break this state. I think that was in his repertoire to do that. You know, to do that. The Democrats have stopped him in every way they could. So now he's going to wreck the state. Because they won't let him have his way because he can't get what he wants, you know, and what he wants is to break unions. I think he wants workmen's comp. He wants so much. He doesn't want a tax hike or something to that effect. But, you know, it's the bottom line is that we have no budget and we had no budget for 3 years. And everybody in the state of Illinois who lives here, pays taxes, owns a home, a car, renting a condo or renting an apartment, every citizen in this state should be pissed off and damn mad at what's going on. You should be pissed off. Every voter in the state of Illinois should be pissed off. I don't care if you're upstate, downstate, you should be pissed off. But the only people that's probably not buddies. Because they want Illinois, they want this state so badly. They want to take it away from the Democrats. They want to take it away from people in general. So if you think because you have a good job, you go into your job every day, driving, catching the train or the L or whatever, or the subway, you may not have that job. What happens if your job goes away because of the state budget? You want to do anything. That could happen. Because if there is no budget in the state of Illinois, by law, no one is supposed to get paid. No one. Because Not having a budget means you cannot pay bills. You don't have the money to pay bills. No one, not anyone who is on a social program or working for the state of Illinois or any state, if there's no budget, no one is supposed to get paid. Not even those 65 to 70,000 state workers who go to work every day. They are not supposed to get paid because there's no state dollars if there's no state budget. But the only reason why they're getting paid is because of people got up on their behinds and they went out and sued this governor. They sued him. And the court said, hey, wow, these people will get paid. But there are so many others in this town in Illinois who are not getting paid, who will not getting paid, who have lost their jobs already. Social programs are maybe more social programs have shut their doors. When a social program shut their doors, that means jobs are lost. Jobs are lost. People can't get the services that they once were getting. Okay, so let's say if another governor, a different governor is voted in, maybe a Democrat, hopefully, he or she is going to have the task of trying to get this state back on its feet again, because it's been knocked cleanly off. They have the task of getting this state back on its feet again, funding, refunding, and reopening some of these vital programs that this guy has destroyed. So we are $16 million or more in billion dollars in debt. And in order for that debt to be realized, my understanding is their taxes will have to be raised in order to pay that backlog of debts that were caused by no budget being enacted in the state of Illinois. So that's going to be on the taxpayers. So that's more taxes we're going to have to pay. And come July 1st, Cook County is going to raise the beverage tax. That means it's going to cost you, if you live in the state of Illinois, a lot more for that Coca-Cola. It's going to cost you a lot more for that orange pop or that milkshake. It's going to cost a lot more. Taxing people to death. A few months before, they enacted a bag tax. You go to the supermarket, you better have a bag, or you might wind up carrying your groceries home in your hand. Yeah, you got to pay for a bag now. If you know, that's ridiculous. But the taxes are just crazy. And they're going to figure out something else to tax. Toni Prepwinkle. I mean, she was just, we thought she was going to be better than Todd Stroger. Obviously not. Wow, I've been talking so much and into what I'm talking about, I just about forgot all about time. But we're just about off the air.
Heaven help the child who never had a home. Heaven help the girl who walks the streets alone. Heaven help the roses if the bombs begin to fall. Heaven never saw. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns.
Heaven help us all. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I hope you join me tomorrow. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.